Hello, I'm Brandon House. Do you appreciate the free programs at worldviewradio.com, WVWTV.com? Do you appreciate the fact we put out a 24-hour-a-day stream of free television? By the way, did you know that's free for you to watch, but it's not free to us? We spend thousands of dollars a month in pushing out free programming. We have to pay the bandwidth. Every time someone listens to a radio show, watches a TV show, we get a bill. We have to pay the bandwidth bill. That comes to thousands of dollars a month, not counting the cost of our IT guys and all the other costs that go with producing television, the guys in the control room, and so much more. If you appreciate WVW Broadcast Network, would you partner with us? You can partner with us and help us push out free programming as a ministry of WVW Foundation, because you know what we could do? Put it all behind a paywall. But instead, we said, let's not do that. Let's push out programming for free as a ministry of the WVW Foundation. Would you please consider making a contribution right now at WVWFoundation.com? That's WVWFoundation.com. You'll also find our mailing address there if you prefer to support us through the mail. You can also use our phone number and make a contribution over the phone by calling 901-468-9357, 901-468-9357. Thank you for supporting free programming through WVWFoundation.com.
This is Brandon House Live. Whether the issue is law, science, economics, history, family, social issues, education, religion, government, or national security, Brannon brings the issues of the day into clear focus through the lens of a Judeo-Christian worldview. And now, here is your host, Brannon House.
All right, good evening. Glad you are with us on this Friday night. What is the night? What is the date today? Friday night, February 24th. We are live on a Friday night, like we always are, live, and we got a big show for you tonight. Nicole Pearson, one of our very favorite attorneys who's fighting for life and liberty and freedom, fighting for truth, law, and justice. And she also is got some big cases going on she's going to talk to us about. Then we're going to have on another attorney, and I think Nicole might stay with us. Then we're going to have another attorney on, along with Mark Fincham, who is a former state rep from Arizona, and he ran for Secretary of State. And he's an expert on voter fraud, but he's also someone that's been briefed on what we're going to present at 8 o'clock Central. Now, how many of you the other night, last night, saw where we played the testimony? I'm going to go see if I can find it. Let's see, the Gateway Pundit. Where we played the testimony of a lady there, Jacqueline Berger, who's talking about drug cartels, money laundering, and politicians being bought off. There's a brand new article about it because the Gateway Pundit columnist was on with me last night about that, right? Well, his name is Jordan Conradson. I guess I'm saying that right. And he has a brand new article out about it called, here it is, Arizona Senate House Elections Presenter claims that the Sinaloa cartel, I guess that's how you say it, uses bribes, money laundering, election fraud to control elected officials and traffic drugs, humans, ballots in Arizona. Now, the testimony was overwhelmingly, spectacularly shocking. If true, and I don't know if it is, if true, this could be the biggest political scandal in American history. Now, she claimed, and she's an investigator working with an attorney, John Thaler. John will be with us tonight. Mr. Thaler is going to be with us tonight, along with Mark Fincham. Mr. Thaler has a book coming out about this. It's going to be about 300 pages. I'm told there's like 3,000 pages of documentation to back this up. We're going to show some of that tonight on the screen. Because as a journalist, as a news reporter, we have the obligation to look into things when they're presented like they are and have been to the Arizona House Senate Combined Committee yesterday. In fact, at the end of the presentation, she was asked questions, and some of them said, well, you got my attention. Another representative said, well, this needs to be looked into. Well, great. That's what that committee should do. But so should freedom-loving journalists and broadcasters like me and others. We should also be looking into this. And so that's what we're going to do tonight. And so Mr. Thaler, I had a great conversation with him today, about 40-minute conversation, and he's agreed to come on tonight and talk about it. And Mark Fincham's agreed to come on as well and talk about this. So this is an exclusive interview. You don't want to miss it. That'll be about 8 o'clock Central in about 25 minutes. And so you should tweet, text, email, Facebook, Truth, you know, however you get out the information, and let folks know, tune in right now, tonight, to Lindell TV. We might even take some phone calls. We'll see how our time goes. Lindell TV, tell them to get over here because we're about to have an exclusive interview. Joining me right now is Nicole Pearson. Nicole, welcome back to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us, Nicole.
Having me. Wow, what an intro.
I know. Isn't this crazy what's happening?
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Absolutely. So I want to pull your website up right away, Nicole. Give us your website again. Truthlawjustice.com?
Facts, law, truth, justice. It's okay. Facts, but we need the facts. We need the facts.
Factstruthlawjustice.com.
Yeah.
All right.
Facts, law, truth, justice.
You see, even you have to think about it. Facts, law, truth.
It's Friday.
Justice.com. All right, there we go. And it's going to pull up, I think, here if my internet isn't so slow. I think I spelled it all right. Yes, I did. There it is.
There it is. Thank you very much.
All right. She does have a shorter name. What is that?
FLTJLLP.com.
Oh, that's, yeah. Because that's definitely firm, right? Easier. That's definitely easy to remember. Factslawtruthjustice.com, folks. Factslawtruthjustice.com. All right. Yeah. So, Nicole, you have a couple big cases you're working on now. You have one right before the Supreme Court in California, correct?
So, yeah, that's actually a sister case that was against the San Diego Unified School District. We sued the Los Angeles Unified School District, which is the biggest school district in the United States. That case is still pending, but we had a major win in California for all California courts. Let them breathe and let them choose is a very significant organization here in Southern California. And they, as well as ICANN, ICANN Decide Action Network with Siri Glimstad, sued also the San Diego Unified School District. And we just finally got a dispositive ruling from the California Supreme Court agreeing with what all of us have been arguing for the last almost 2 years now, which is that local school districts do not have the legal authority to require new vaccines as a condition to your child matriculating through schools in person. It's huge. It's a final ruling. It's a definitive ruling. The case is closed, and so we're very, very pleased about what our colleagues actually were able to do.
Wow. Okay, so the big school districts cannot require COVID mm-hmm. vaccines. That's just the mm-hmm. ruling by the California Supreme Court,
yes.
This is a huge victory.
It's a huge victory. It went through the San Diego Superior Court, and Judge Mayer, an amazing judge, very obviously very intellectual, bright judge, and intellectually honest judge as well, ruled with the two organizations and the two law firms I just mentioned. It's Anstead, Anlin and Korn and Siri Glimstad that, yes, the California Health and Safety Code, the California legislature, those are the only ways to add new vaccine requirements for children to attend schools in California. Of course, the San Diego Unified School District appealed that immediately, and the Court of Appeals affirmed the Superior Court's ruling. They agreed, and then, of course, that they asked for the California Supreme Court to review that, and the California Supreme Court refused or declined to review the California Court of Appeals decision. So it's very significant that that decision came out on the 22nd. So again, that is the nail in the coffin. The decision has been made that the only way that new vaccine requirements can be made in California for California school children is through the legislative or regulatory process, and that would come through the Capitol or the California Department of Public Health. It's huge because we saw the writing on the wall that districts were going to continue to require new jabs, new medicines, new masking, testing, quarantining, contact tracing requirements for your children to go through school. And now we have a very strong ruling from the highest court in the land saying that that is not within their legal authority to do whatsoever.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not an attorney and you are. The good part about this is it means that the health officials and the bureaucrats and the school officials can't just become wanton dictators. Wanton dictators, and we'll just do whatever we want. There's got to be the checks and balances.
It's a huge deal, because it's everything that we've seen, that we've been fighting for this entire time, is that there is, even in a state of emergency, there are rules and policies and procedures of how this goes. And what they have done is just try and ram the state of emergency through, tell everyone what they have to do, just try and distract us with fear and, you know, death and dismemberment and the ticker, the body ticker at the bottom of the screen, to distract us from the rule of law, from the law and the Constitution. And then that's what we had, exactly what we said. We have local county boards of supervisors that are issuing orders, and we have districts that are signing last minute special meeting resolutions that are requiring your children to take experimental new drugs in order to matriculate through school or attend school in person. That's not the way it goes. It's what we've been fighting about this whole entire time. All of our lawsuits are about restoring the rule of law. Even in the state of emergency, there are rules in the California, it's called the Emergency Services Act. There are emergency rules and policies and procedures that need to be followed, even in the state of emergency. Your rights and your privileges as an American citizen, as a California citizen, wherever you live, are not suspended in the state of emergency. If that were true, then the government would come up with an endless set of emergencies to forever suspend your rights and your privileges as a citizen, as we see that they're already attempting to do. So this is massive. They agreed with us, and we're very, very pleased. Our clients feel very vindicated. I know a lot of California families are sleeping easier knowing that they can sign up for schools and that their school district can't require new drugs or medical procedures in order for their kids to attend school in person.
So this would have to then have legislation and go through the legislative process, which means that again empowers the people, that empowers the people who are represented in a constitutional republic. Mm-hmm. You're the attorney, I don't have to tell you this, but just so
you're doing great.
Just so the audience remembers, in a constitutional republic, we have what is called agency. Just like I hire an attorney or I hire my insurance agent, they represent me but through what is called agency. They're my agent to represent me. Right. And so I can fire my attorney, I can fire my insurance agent, but they are there to do my bidding, to look out for me. And that's the constitutional republic of agency. And so now the people can say to their elected officials, yes, we want that, no, we don't want that. And then we can have the legislative process and go through that, whereas before...
And be involved.
And be involved. And you can go, and you can send, and you can support financially, factslawtruthjustice.com, and you can give financial support to factslawtruthjustice.com and say, I'm supporting them because I want an advocacy organization led by someone like Nicole Pearson to go to the Capitol there in California, in Sacramento, and represent me, a parent. And of course, if a bunch of parents come together and say, yeah, we're all going to financially support factslawtruthjustice.com because we know that she'll go up there and do our bidding. She's a mom, and she'll go up there and do our bidding because she's one of us. She's a parent. Then this is, and then our state legislators can hear from her, and she's representing us. They're supposed to be representing us, and maybe we can come to something, and we all can be briefed on what's happening and move forward. But that was not what was happening. These were little dictators prior to this, right?
That's exactly, I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with Sasha Latovia, I think is the way you say her last name, and Catherine Watt, but we have been fighting locally what they are now revealing at the federal level, which is a massive fraud. It's a criminal Ponzi scheme fraud. They ushered in, and you know, unfortunately for many of our viewers here, Trump ushered in this declaration of emergency. And with that declaration of emergency, we saw many rules that all of a sudden, all of these executive orders, all of these announcements, all of these press releases that were coming out that were telling people that they were going to have to do something, even though there were no laws or regulations in place that were, again, legally enforceable, requiring anybody to do anything that the government was saying. Certainly, President Biden took that and just really ran amok with it and has created the disaster that we have seen the last 3 years. And that trickled down all the way to the local levels. And I've always told you, you know, we can always fight the WHO, World Health Organization, and the United Nations. But my goal as a mama bear on the ground in Southern California and California has been to throw sand in the gears to slow down this monster. And that's what everyone has the ability, the authority, and hopefully now the education, knowledge, and resources to do for themselves in their own backyards. Like you hit the nail on the head. You really, I can't summarize it any better than you did. This is a constitutional republic. These are your public servants. They serve the public. They are your elected representatives. If they do not represent you, you have the obligation to go and tell them. And then when they continue to flout your agency, right, the scope of your agency, then you have the obligation to remove them from office. And that's every single American citizen's right. And we have to all be exercising that right. You do not need to be an attorney. And that's why we spent so much time on our website with resources, with notices of liability and sample letters that you can send directly to, whether it's your city council, your local board of supervisors, your school district, all the way up to your state representatives, to exercise and remind them of your rights and how you intend to exercise them if they don't serve you or represent you.
Absolutely.
It's really, really, really important. All right. It's been a big Ponzi scheme.
So let me transition here in the about 12 minutes we have. You have been so good on exposing this $78 billion, right. $78 billion, folks, with a B. $78 billion.
No, with a million. With a million.
78 million, excuse me. 78 million with an M. Sorry.
We're not Ukraine. We're
yeah,
just
I know. Down. I know. $78 million health facility that's being built in Orange County. Huge health complex. 78 million. And last night I had on, and it's interesting what you gather, what I've gathered, what Rachel or Rebecca Walzer has gathered independently of each other. And then when we talk, it's like, wait a minute, we're all following and pulling on the same threads, not knowing, right?
Right.
So here's
right.
Rebecca Walzer last night. She's like, I want to come on and talk about how I've been studying the economic and health system merging, the economic and health system merging, digital platforms, digital IDs, yes. Social credit scores. You've showed us the equity chart and equity surveys for Orange County. And, we just reported tonight on the news, the IRS now wants to start auditing people and looking at the taxes and tax returns of people based on their skin color, you know? So certain people with darker skin are going to get an automatic pass. We're just not going to look there. But white folks, we're going to go and check out the white folks here. And it's just to try to stir up strife among people. That's all they're trying to do and divide us. But this whole equity and social credit score system is now being merged with education and health, education and health. And she's absolutely right. You're right. This week, Nicole, I've been doing a series called Transhumanism is Eugenics. Transhumanism is eugenics. And today was part four for radio/television from 1 to 2 Central. And Julian Huxley, the first executive director of the United Nations Education Scientific Cultural Organization, in 1948 wrote a paper. I've been quoting it for years, and he said that we have to think about what's impossible now so it might become possible later, and that was eugenics. Well, I wanted to do a little more study on this eugenics, and because we're looking at, you know, people pushing this idea that older people need to die. You've lived a good life. It's time to die. We've seen the commercials from Agenda 21. I've lived a good life. I'm concerned about population. I'm concerned there's not enough resources for people, and maybe it's time for my time, you know, to be over. I've lived a good life. And it's basically the right to die has become the duty to die. And we're seeing a professor this week, so-called, come out this week and talk about older folks. You know, they need to go. What we're really talking about here with all of these things, I believe, with depopulation, sterilization. At one time, our government did this for sterilized people, particularly minorities. Yeah. Our Supreme Court ruled that three generations of
imbeciles.
Yeah, imbeciles was too many. I mean, we have this kind of history, right? America's not perfect. You know, I understand that. And for those who say, oh, you're anti-American. No, I'm for the truth, the good, the bad, you know, the truth, so we can correct problems and move forward. But this philosophy is still prevalent. And whether it was in Nazi Germany with the Rockefellers over there working, whether it's with BASF, whether it was with any of these other companies, that mentality, and in Great Britain, it was strong. Hitler was actually in jail as a young man when he went to jail for a while, reading eugenics papers from the West Coast over in his prison cell as a young man. So this has been going on for a while. But I found this week, and I want to show you a minute or two of it and have you respond, because I think this whole health thing, combining with digital equity scores or whatnot, is trying to say, if you are, and I'm not trying to offend you because I'm actually trying to compliment you. If you are like Nicole Pearson or Brandon House or many of these viewers tonight, but Nicole is the kind of person we don't want to see having children. Nicole's right. The kind of person, she doesn't do very well in the scores. I mean, we can talk about Brandon House right. And his score, but we all know what Brandon House's score is going to be. But let's focus on what Nicole's doing. She's an attorney. She's fighting these things. She's a problem. She's not for group consensus, right? So you become a problem. I become a problem in media. You become a problem in the law. And pretty soon, they don't want anything to do with us. And what I have figured out, Nicole, is that it's no longer about eugenics based on your skin color, largely, for the most of them anymore, because you have people of darker skin color that have received this training, like Tetros at the WHO, who went through this, schools that were embracing this ideology. It's now about what is the color of your heart. What's your worldview?
Absolutely.
What are your values? And if you don't hold the values they want, they don't want you having children. So look at this 1937 black and white documentary by Julian Huxley, who's narrating it. Watch a little bit of this. We'll have Nicole comment. Watch this, guys.
Here is a man who, although normal, comes from a mentally defective family.
Now, wait a minute. Although he's normal, he comes from a mentally defective family. Well, who defines what is mentally defective?
Exactly.
Nicole?
Exactly.
And so he says this lady, he and his wife, they go on to have children, and we'll continue it. But who defines mentally defective?
No, of course. I mean, that's the problem, right? And what we have come to see is the people that are defining what is health and safe and effective, and what is healthy and what is not healthy, are these, as you mentioned, appointed cronies. They aren't even, I'm not at liberty to discuss. We will have another major bombshell coming out to you. We have a major hearing on Monday. After that hearing, I will be throwing up the bat signal to talk to you. We have a very serious major problem, because our firm is one of the only firms, and actually might be the only firm that I am aware of, actually, that has taken the deposition of an appointed via the elected representative's health care officer. And we have a very, very, very serious problem. If people think that this is going to end with COVID-19, you had better buckle your seatbelts, because they want to add flu. They want to add RSV. They want to add every single viral disease that we have lived for centuries without even thinking twice about. They want to add it to the list of communicable diseases that they can start to implement health and safety orders and then report data to the California Department of Public Health and to the FDA and CDC. This is not, again, you know me, it's not a conspiracy. It's taken straight from the horse's mouth. And we will elaborate more after this hearing, and we have a better handle of where we're going. But all of this, and we've talked about it so many times before, it was one of the red flags. Everything that you just said for me was, if we were truly in the state of emergency,
okay,
many, many things. Go ahead. What?
This is historic. Can someone come do something about this? Seriously.
Well, last time I had my kids, you can have a cat.
She's a studio cat, but she's not supposed to be in the studio while we're on the air. She just climbed up the back of my chair. No, yeah, leave her in the control room. She normally sleeps in the control room because the equipment is warm. So she climbs up on the equipment. She sleeps in the equipment. But Thomas or Logan left the door open, so she came out of the control room. She's actually,
I feel like
she's actually
getting really, really intense. So maybe
she thinks we needed a moment of levity there. She's actually, she's my cat.
There's no time for levity.
She's my cat. She became my cat because I rescued her from the pound after some nosy neighbor dragged her off to the pound because she was being a cat and outside. And I went and rescued her. And ever since I did that, she thinks she's my cat. She's not able to be my cat, but she thinks she is now. Well, anyway, sorry about that.
It's not a problem. It's not a problem. It's just funny. This is funny, because this is so serious. But that was really funny. but people are going to be tagged and fracked and put in camps. That's where I was going with this. You're right. What you were going to say is right.
It's well, good. I'm glad we agree.
I got it. I'm under control.
You're fine. I'm going to show a little more of this clip while we both compose ourselves. So here's this 1937 black and white footage documentary by Julian Huxley saying, this guy, although he's normal, he comes from a family that's defective. Now watch what he says about his the poor guy's wife and their children.
Here is his wife, who is also normal. I've had 17 children. Let us examine the pedigree of these children. Five of them died in infancy. Three are still too young for an opinion to be formed of their mental state. A boy and two girls. Only two of the remaining children are normal. A man and a girl. The remaining seven children are all mental defectives, marked on the pedigree in black. Of these, two live at home, a man and a crippled dwarf girl. There is one man in an institution and a woman with the mentality of a child.
Now, what they go on to do is take a couple examples here, and again, I'm gonna speed ahead in this documentary because I want to show you what it is they're saying here. They show these children in this home, and they go on to declare that it would have been better if these children had never been born. Now, that's playing God, and that's what transhumanism is all about, playing God. And you know what? There are many, many families watching tonight that have children that are Down syndrome, that have children that have physical disabilities. They love those kids. They feel they were blessed to get these special children. They love them with all their heart. If they had to do it over again, they would want that specific child because they love them so much. So here are the elite playing God. Now, I want you to notice, Nicole, what they say about these people that are in, many of them in this group home. Now, what I notice about what they're going to say about these so-called defective young people, well, if they're defective, I must really be defective because I can't do what you're about to see them doing. Watch what they're doing. Here we go.
If carefully trained, they can be taught simple routine tasks.
Here we go.
There are men in the workshops, carpentering.
Now, look at the guy in the far back. Look at the guy. I don't know if you can see back there, folks, the far left back there. He is building, he's got that little wood, piece of wood on a something that spins. I'm sure there's a technical name for it. And he's building a piece of decorative furniture.
Right.
But he's defective. No? And this young man is sawing, and they're working. Now watch what else they do.
Some of them are taught to do the bootmaking for the colony.
Now, I can't work with leather and do boot making. Come on, look at this. One, you're going to see in a minute, they're doing fine tailoring.
Right. While others make clothes for themselves and their fellows.
You see, one of them here is going to be running a Singer sewing machine in just a minute. There you go.
Wow.
Now, all these people, they are considering defective. Then he goes on to explain who it is that should be having children, and it ends up being the elite. The elite should be allowed to have children, and he goes on to show this one family, and these are all artists and artistes and actors and actresses and painters. They should be having children. Only they should be having children. And they show another actor. Everyone they show is either an artist or an actor or an actress or is in instrumental. Is an orchestra conductor. I mean, this is what they say. But you know what? This fits. This absolutely positively fits with what was being said by Julian Huxley in 1957 when he coined the phrase, right here, transhumanism. And then,
right.
Then he goes on to say, or in this article I found about Great Britain back in December of 2010 is when this was published, and I presented this back in 3 years ago. And look at this, Nicole. These Bertrand Russell and George Bernard Shaw, these Fabian socialists, wanted people to have procreation tickets so that what? To prevent the gene pool of the elite being diluted by inferior human beings. And then those who decided to have children without holders of a different colored card, they would be punished with a heavy fine. And this
right.
Why was this? H.G. Wells praised eugenics as the first step towards the elimination of detrimental types and characteristics and the fostering of desirable types. And then they went on to say that their goal was to advance and protect the breeding of the elite. They even stated that, the breeding of the elite. Okay? So in conclusion here, I am believing more and more that this shots sterilizing people, it goes right to the ovaries on some of these little girls and other things the doctors are telling us. This is a depopulation plan. It's a sterilization plan. It's a eugenics plan. It is a technocrat transhumanist plan. What say you?
Right. Well, I think that this plan accomplished many, many things. I personally believe it's eugenics. I think it's a genocide. I totally agree with you. If you don't want to go that far into history, what you're talking about is history. These are historical facts. These are concepts that have existed for centuries. This isn't something new. This isn't a QAnon conspiracy
theory. That's right.
Like you're saying, you're looking at black and white footage. We're talking about Hitler. These are phenomena that have existed forever. They've always talked about population control. They've always talked about eugenics and protecting the best genes and getting rid of the, you know, expunging society of the worst genes and the genetics. And like you said, we even did that here in the United States. We lobotomized people.
Yes.
And we sterilized people. And we did that. That is part of our history. That's why they want to erase history. So I think that's the first step in recognizing that this is a real concept that's always existed. I think the plan, that's why they pushed it very heavily on the elderly. I think that's why they push the jabs very heavily on, you know, immunocompromised individuals. We want to get rid of immunocompromised.
Of the weak. The weak. Get rid of the weak.
The weak. Immunocompromised. That's why they're pushing it on pregnant women. My dad is an OBGYN. That was his real wake-up call. He's like, we have never, ever. And he was pro-vaccine. He told me, get vaccinated. We want things to go back to normal. He was Yale. Brilliant, brilliant doctor. And what drank the Kool-Aid was telling me and my friends, get vaccinated so we can get back to normal, not even a medical opinion, just, you know, a social opinion that had been spoon-fed to him by pharma. But when they started recommending it for pregnant women, that's when he knew that something was wrong, because he said, we've never done that. We would never test vaccines. We do not test vaccines on pregnant women. So I think there was a big push for that, and also for children. So sterilization, we already knew coming out of Japan that they were already doing studies on it going to the sperm and to the, you know, the testes. So I think it was just massive, you know, actually just elimination of the population right out the gate. And then every single person who was left standing got tagged with the QR code that was associated with their vaccine or their exemption, so that whoever was left standing could then be filed, ranked and filed into the digital system. And that's what we have left, the social credit system.
And in Brazil, it's being reported now in Brazil, they're looking to start imprisoning those who won't get vaccinated.
And they're not giving out services. They're not giving out government subsidies to people who have not. Bolsonaro is not giving out the public or the government subsidies to individuals who don't have proof of vaccination.
Yeah, that's already happened. Not Bolsonaro, Lula, the new guy.
Excuse me. It's already happening. They did it in Israel. I had a big fight with my ultrasound doctor who is from Israel, who wanted me to wear a mask. And I asked him point blank, how do you feel about that green pass? And that was the end of the conversation. He's very well aware. It started with, you get your vaccine, then you need to get boosted every 6 months, then you need to get boosted every 3 months, then you get boosted every month, and people are dropping like flies, including children. And that's what ultimately ended that system in Israel. So we don't need to see that happen here, even though it's already rolling out.
Absolutely. Factslawtruthjustice.com, factslawtruthjustice.com. Nicole, would you like to stay and hear what we're about to talk about? And
then I would love to hear.
Stay there. We'll get this started and bring you back in, all right?
Okay.
Factslawtruthjustice.com, Nicole Pearson. All right. Joining me now is John Thaler. He's an attorney, and I had a good 40-minute conversation with him today. This all came about, as you guys know, because last night I was interviewing Ivan Raiklin and Colonel John Mills from the Arizona House and Senate Committee. They were on the Lindell Report, and I was sitting in for Mike Lindell, who was out on business. And they said, you've got to hear the last person that testified, Jacqueline Berger. So I said, Logan, can you pull it up in the control room? We have it on there. We started playing it. We were stunned at what we were hearing. Of course, I've since last night watched the whole thing, including the Q&A with the members of the committee talking to her. Today, I reached out to her, and she graciously put me in touch with the attorney that she was representing, John Thaler. And John spent 40 minutes on the phone with me today talking. Now, I don't understand all of this, nor can I validate it, but I can certainly ask questions. And isn't that my job as a journalist, as a news host, is to ask questions and to be able to verify something? And shouldn't that committee in Arizona do that? Shouldn't they say, well, this is very interesting, we need to look into this? In fact, one person did after she made her presentation. Another said, you've got my attention. Well, I understand some don't want to talk about this at all. They don't think this should have ever happened, nor should the testimony have ever occurred and been before the committee. My question is, why not? You can either validate it or you can refute it. And if you can validate it, then we better go into more investigations. If you can refute it, then refute it and show that it's not true and move on. But there's too many facts being buried. Things are thought to be too, well, just too fantastic, just too overwhelming to actually look at. Well, that's not how you're supposed to conduct these research panels and hearings. And we, well, here, we love to ask questions. And that's how we get to the bottom of things. So tonight, I'm trying to be educated and informed. And I'm thankful that John was willing to come on and help us do that tonight, along with Mark Finchem, former state representative who also ran for Secretary of State in Arizona. And we'll let you decide, and we're going to show you some documents and see if we can get to the bottom of this very interesting testimony held yesterday by this investigator that spoke. Welcome, sir, John Thaler. Thank you for being with us tonight, sir.
Thank you for having me.
And Mark Finchem, thanks for being with us, Mark. Hey, Mark. Are you there,
Thank
Mark?
You.
Yep.
All yeah.
Right. Good.
Can you hear me?
I can. So, Mark, Mark, before we get started here, you know the attorney, John Thaler, correct? You know, and you've visited with him and you've looked at some of this?
Well, I've not met him in face-to-face, but that's for personal security reasons.
Yep, yep.
But he and I have talked, and he has sent me a good bit of his work product. Now, of course, the spin machine is going to be out there saying, well, he's sour grapes. He's got a case for child support or a case for child possession, whatever that may be. At the end of the day, he has got transaction records. He has got what I would call, and he may correct me, forensic examination of real estate transactions that appear to be, shall we say, money laundering as opposed to legitimate transactions. Now, John and I talked perhaps 3, maybe 4 months ago. I think that originally his book was supposed to come out in the first week of December. Here we are now, 24 February. But it's because, and I'll leave this to him, I think it's because he has uncovered even more information. And it deals with the money laundering of the Sinaloa cartel and the pathways for where that money goes and the influence that it buys.
Wow. All right. Mr. Thaler, is that a true assessment by Representative Finchem?
Yes, I think that is a true statement by him. He and I, you know, have not met in person, kind of both for our personal security reasons. That's one of the reasons why Ms. Brager was before the committee yesterday and not me. Our security, let me put it this way. In the last 3 years, I have had at least 6 known attempts made on my life, 2 of which almost succeeded, 1 of which actually damaged severely one of my clients and put him in the hospital.
What is it? Let's get started and jump right in, and we're going to show some documents along the way as well. What is it, Mr. Thaler, that you have, and how did you get involved in all this? And then, of course, he mentioned a child, and I know the backstory of that, but the audience is going to all wonder about that. So let me let you get started. And of course, obviously, we want to do the Cliff Note version if we can, so we can get right into the election fraud part. But you have to lay some groundwork first, correct?
Yeah, let me lay a little groundwork. And I don't think most of this is stuff that people don't either know or suspect. But I don't think until we came along, I don't think anybody connected the dots. So let's go back a little bit. You know, in 2009, the state of Arizona privately ran a audit on their agencies because they believed that monies being laundered out of California at that time were flowing into state agencies. I can't comment on that investigation because I was not directly involved in it. However, as part of that investigation, In 2014, the state of Arizona looked at money laundering coming in from California that was going into single family residences. It is, you know, whether somebody watches, you know, TV or watches movies, one of the staple, what should we call it, money laundering methods has to do with buying and selling real estate. Single family residents are usually the best. So we were tasked in 2011 with looking at monies being taken from California, from illegal activities in California, and moving into the state of Arizona using the monies for the purchases of single family residences in some of the outskirt towns, Santan Valley, Avondale, Goodyear, places like that, Litchfield Park. And we concluded that a lot of monies were flowing in to new construction projects that were going on in Arizona. That was kind of the beginning of the construction boom in Arizona. So that's what we concluded. In 2014, my office was asked to look further at this issue. And at this time, it wasn't so much monies coming from California, but it was monies coming from the Midwest. So we were asked to look at Midwest cash, mostly coming from Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa, to determine whether or not monies going into properties in those states being used for money laundering were also then flowing into Arizona. Just so your audience knows, the monies going into those three states was already known to the U.S. Attorney's Office. From about 2005 to about 2010, the U.S. Attorney's Office actually got indictments, charged individuals, and convicted a number of individuals of money laundering. That included not just the drug dealers and drug suppliers who were doing it, but also that was real estate agents and brokers, that was escrow companies and title insurance companies. So we were asked to see whether or not that was flowing into Arizona. And the conclusion by late 2014 was that, yes, it was. We did not believe it was widespread at the time, but it was flowing into Arizona. It was especially flowing in, again, into areas where new properties were being built, so where less expensive housing existed. And from that, you know, we sent in our conclusions, and that, to my knowledge, was kind of going to be the end of it. That was the end of the investigation. We sealed the boxes. We were done. In 2018, somewhat by accident, now with everything, and before this, just understand, before 2015, documents such as recorder records in most states, including in Arizona and Maricopa County, were not available online. So for us to do research, we had to actually go down to recorder's offices or go down to the Corporation Commission offices and actually request specific documents, then request more documents, and so on and so forth. By 2015, everything was online. So in 2018, when we were looking for something totally different than this, we actually found additional documents that related to the 2014 investigation. And those documents in 2018 kind of were the beginning of the process of where we've gotten to today. So the process of where we are today is that over the last 3 years, since 2019, my office has been working an investigation involving racketeering activities in Arizona, a lot of which comes from monies funneled from other states, but it also comes from monies that come directly into Arizona through drug transactions.
So how did you initially discover all this? Is this where a family member comes in?
Yeah. One of the things that happened was that there was a family member who was directly involved in the paperwork for this. As you can imagine, I mean, we have now uncovered, what we think is probably upwards of 35,000 transactions that are fraudulent transactions. The amount of paperwork involved here is huge, and the number of people involved is not, one or two people. But I was directly involved and had a relationship with one of the people who was directly involved, very, very much unbeknownst to me. And, that was a blessing and, of course, a curse. The curse was that she was involved. The blessing was that it allowed me to ask questions and ultimately to get answers to it. Yesterday in the testimony, the discussion was about two individuals, Brittany Chavez and Donna Chavez. Brittany Chavez is the one who we're talking about mostly. Brittany and I actually got married in April of 2016. We had a child in December of 2017. And it was in 2018 when I was looking through documents with the recorder's office that I found documents relating to her that clearly also related to the Midwest transactions that I'd been looking at in 2014. So, and from there, it just kind of went off the scope, because once you know what you're looking for and you know what the documents are, that you're searching for, especially nowadays with the databasing, we could find far more and more and more documents. And that uncovered not just at the time money laundering activities through these properties, but it also uncovered payroll theft. It covered life insurance fraud, auto insurance fraud. It covered bankruptcy fraud, obviously tax evasion that goes with it. And then ultimately that led us to the obvious, which was with all this going on, were there officials, public, you know, both elected and appointed, who were also being bribed? So for the most part, up until really a couple of months ago, until really after the 2022 election, we were mostly concentrating on payroll theft and life insurance fraud and the money laundering. And, you know, just to make this more clear, Brittany in November 2019 came to me and came to one of my colleagues when it became clear what her involvement was. And at that time, she asked us for WITSEC protection, which for your audience out there is federal witness protection. That's what it's called. It's WITSEC protection. And in order to get that, in order to even apply for that, you have to be willing to inform the U.S. attorney of every criminal activity you've been involved in. Well, Brittany was not at the time willing to tell me or my colleague all of the activities she was involved in, but she did provide us a number of documents. She provided us a portable hard drive. She provided us several flash drives, which contain a lot of the evidence from which we then launched a deeper investigation into this. Just to bring you up to present and what this has to do with elections is that once we knew that there were elected and appointed officials who were accepting bribes or who were certainly participating in some of the racketeering schemes that we had uncovered, we then, seeing some of the things going on with the elections, decided that we would look at election officials themselves, not just members of the legislature, but people who were appointed to various election positions, both in counties and at the state level. And that's what brought us to where we are today.
Wow. Okay, so has Brittany, that's her name, right, Brittany?
Correct.
Has she agreed to do what needs to be done to be a protected witness to date?
What happened was is that in 2019, she wanted to do exactly that. The problem is that with many of her family members directly involved in the racketeering enterprises, she was being threatened right and left. And what ultimately happened was she was essentially threatened out of doing it. I think in addition to her being threatened, I was being threatened, and probably so was our child.
Wow.
So at that point, you know, with a two-year-old child, this became an extremely, extremely difficult situation, and it's remained that way ever since.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, John. You're working on a book on this that Mark Fincham, who's with us and listening, and so is Nicole. You've written a book, and I understand it's going to be about 300 pages and have about 3,000 documents to back up the 300 pages. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that you pointed out from the beginning is that there's a plethora of issues here. You've got multiple issues of racketeering here, multiple issues of bribery, of corruption, of public corruption, et cetera. And the ability to tell the story in even an hour or two, it is extremely difficult. So what we decided to do long before actually that we ever got to the October election, back in August, we talked about it. My team, and I'll talk about my team in a minute, but my team and I decided that one of the ways to get this material out, to make it clear to the public what we were dealing with, what we did, how we conducted these investigations, how essentially we moved from dot one to dot two to dot three, was to put it in book form. And at that point, we decided we would put this all together. We have looked at, I think you heard on the testimony, we have looked at literally about 120,000, 125,000 documents at this point. We have had reviewed by forensic experts something close to, I think, 10 to 15,000 pages of documents at this point. It's a horrendous number, and there are so many findings that, like I said, I mean, just listing the findings here would be difficult. We decided to do was to give a narrative of the book, which was about 300-page narrative of how this investigation began, where it went, what happened along the way, and then what we concluded from it. One of the things that we did provide to the committee yesterday was two things. One, Ms. Brager actually provided roughly 20 different conclusions that we have reached. But she also provided in the packets to the members, I think, the entirety of what we now have, which is roughly 47 separate conclusions and findings from our investigation.
So have you turned any of this over to, say, a district attorney or attorney general somewhere?
Yeah, some of the material. Now, remember, almost all of this at this point was pre-election. But I have had meetings both with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, I've had meetings with the bankruptcy trustee's office. I've had meetings with several attorneys general in several states and their investigators. Also, some of the specific, you know, state agencies, not so much in Arizona, but in other states where this has gone on, including in California, I've had meetings directly with the state agencies where we have presented the evidence. And in two of the states, California and New Mexico, where a number of these activities are going on, those states have already taken a number of corrective actions to try to stop and prevent the corruption.
So, none of us trust the FBI today. And if some of these elected officials are bought off, blackmailed, profiting from this, how do you get remedy? And are any of them taking the action necessary, or are they doing what you would expect for someone who's blackmailed or compromised?
I wouldn't say either way. It's not so much an either or. Let me say it this way. There are a lot of great FBI agents. You know, there's a difference between the agency as a bureaucratic agency and agents who every day work very, very hard on whatever they are ordered to work on. The same thing with police and the same thing with other investigators. Attorney generals' offices and investigators do a tremendous job, and they should be complimented on it. The problem is less at the local level or at the agent level. It's really, you know, at the higher up levels.
Right.
The problem that you have in Arizona, which is really now affecting, I think, the entirety of the United States, is the drug trafficking. The amount of money involved is, you know, in the billions of dollars. Now, you know, most people hear that in terms of things like the federal deficit and numbers like that, which are just these extreme numbers with lots of zeros. But you have to remember what the average person makes, what the average state's income is. What states' budgets are.
So let me ask you, for the sake of time, let me interrupt you. So are you saying that the cartels are using their billions of dollars to buy elected officials to keep the border open, keep their businesses going inside the United States?
That would be precisely what I'm saying. And the more and more that the border has been more porous in Arizona, and of course there's a market for the drugs, because if people aren't buying the drugs, this isn't a problem. So it works on both ends.
All right.
But as that has happened, you've shoved about $25 billion, you know, over the last 10 years into the Arizona economy from drugs.
Okay. Now let's walk through how this affects the election. But let's start maybe with, again, and I'm not interested in slandering or defaming anyone. So I want to be careful. I'm just asking what your research is and what your research has shown. And again, if Katie Hobbs or anyone else that you mentioned wants to come on here and be interviewed live like he is and offer up why this is true or not true, happy to do it. But there has you and I think through your research, Jacqueline named names yesterday. One of them was that of Katie Hobbs, the Secretary of State who became governor, correct?
That's correct.
What are you alleging that she did?
What we're alleging is that in the schemes for the racketeering, what we have is twofold things. One of them is transactions for buying and selling properties where there is no real buyer or seller of the property. So the transactions themselves are used to move money, but where the property itself doesn't move, you know, where it's not, there's not a new buyer or a new seller. It's actually fake transaction, but the money moves and that helps launder the money. The second type is bribes. Bribes, we have found, are paid through what is called, what we call a phony mortgage system. So let me explain and give you an example. If I want to bribe you, I can just come to your office, I can hand you a suitcase of cash, and I can ask you to do something for me. But the other way I can bribe you is to do it with other means. And one of the means that we found here is through phony mortgages, which is I tell you, all right, go out tomorrow and buy a property with, say, 10% down. And then the rest of your mortgage is going to be funded through a mortgage company that I have set up that's going to pay the seller, the real seller, an honest seller, the remainder of the money, except you don't actually owe the mortgage. So the trust deed that's recorded with the county recorder's office says that you owe, say, $300,000 on a mortgage, except that you never have to pay that mortgage. That money is provided as part of the bribe. The mortgage company is not a real licensed mortgage company. The escrow company and usually the title company involved are also not real. Sometimes they are, but most of the time they're not. And now you've gotten the benefits of the $300,000 without ever taking cash.
So there's no paper trail because the money's in the equity of the house.
Correct. And the paper trail that you have would be the normal trail you would see as if the transaction were a normal transaction.
Now, I'm going to go to the screen here, guys. This is his book, and at the end, and this is, I think, what the elected officials got before we bring Mark back in here. This is what I think the elected officials got yesterday, and I'm scrolling through here. What are these deeds of trust? What is all this documentation that is in this document you gave out to the legislators yesterday, which you've seen that we get a copy can show here? What is all this?
Well, there's a lot of documents in there, but there's two types of documents, essentially. One of them, for example, is a series of documents on Katie Hobbs, which show a series of deeds, trust deeds, that she's allegedly received as a result of loans. The problem with these is twofold. One, the notarizations on a number of these deeds are falsified notarizations. They match up with a whole assortment of falsified notarizations that we have discovered over the years. So we can compare signatures, and that's what we do. She has ones that compare perfectly dead on to that. So that's one issue. Secondly, we look at signatures. And if you look very carefully, and it's not necessarily easy for the average person to tell, but if you look very carefully, what you will find is that even the signatures of both her and her partner are not the same signatures. So even a number of the signatures on there are questioned document signatures.
So does that mean someone was doing fraud in their name?
No, it can mean some. Well, let's put it this way. It certainly is the case that somebody was doing fraud in their name. But if you're asking somebody doing fraud in their name that they don't know, no. And here's why there's a problem with this. Because if you then go to Ms. Hobbs' documents filed with the Arizona Corporations Commission, such as a number of LLCs and corporations that she's worked with or founded or been a part of, we also see that the document signatures and the document handprinting, especially for the documents that were not simply uploaded, you know, computerized into the system, but were hand filled out, also match the phony handwritings that we have in the rest of the schemes. So we have now, you know, probably, you know, say it's about 10,000 phony LLCs and corporations. And they're not phony in the sense that they're filed, but they're phony in the sense that they're used for the money laundering. When the handwritings that are in those companies match up with the handwritings on the deeds, then it's very hard to say you didn't know anything about it.
Now, do you have any handwriting experts that can look at these signatures?
We don't do anything and don't present anything that didn't go through a forensic question documents expert.
Can you tell me about your expert's qualifications?
Our expert is Linda L. Mitchell. She's one of the top forensic QDEs, question document experts in the country. In fact, she is the only QDE who is certified by the state of California to investigate election fraud. One of the things that she does is looks at ballot signatures when they come in for mailed in ballots. The state of California trusts her to do that. We trust her to do this. She has now looked at, I think, over 10,000 pages of documents at this point.
So tell me, what is the significance of the fake signatures? In other words, how does it facilitate the fraud?
Well, there's two different ways. In the case of Katie Hobbs, one of the things wasn't just simply the signatures. The first thing we tend to look for is this. We kind of look, here's how we investigate. We do two things here. One is we look at the notarizations. If the notarizations match up to other phony notarizations in terms of the handwriting, in terms of the signature, sometimes it's in terms of the stamp, then we go further and oftentimes we'll then look at the signatures for the parties. And when we look at the signatures for the parties, we look to see do their signatures match other documents. So in the case of trust deeds or warranty deeds, which is a deed that you usually sign off on when you are selling a property, it's what the seller signs, we can look at usually 20 to 30 documents and see whether or not all those signatures match up. So now we not only know whether or not your notarization is phony, we know whether or not the signatories on the documents are phonies, with the buyer or the seller. Okay, once we look at that and we have questions about that, then what we do is we usually go to both the mortgage company and we determine whether or not that mortgage company exists. Who set it up? Where was it set up? Was it properly licensed? In the case of a number of the Hobbs documents, the mortgage companies involved, certainly are real on paper, but their document filings show the same handwriting as what is in the notarizations, and as is what is in the ACC filings. So the ACC filings, the Arizona Corporation Commission filings, handwritings match and handprintings match up with the deeds which then tend to match up with other documents. So it's not just a singular issue we look at. We look at three or four different issues, and then we look at the mortgage companies. And if the mortgage company documents line up as being the same handwriting, then we kind of, you know, bingo, we have a winner. Then we take those documents and we send them over to Ms. Mitchell, and we ask her to verify what we are seeing.
All right, so let me ask you, as we try to move as quick as we can, let's move the election fraud now. Where does the election fraud come into this?
Well, the election fraud comes in several different ways. When you have elected and appointed officials who have these kinds of racketeering documents, then one of the things that we look at that point is, where is this coming in? I mean, obviously, it doesn't make any sense to bribe somebody if there's not something in return. And I want to say something very clear about this. In Arizona, which is different than other states, the bribe problem is not so much about somebody bringing in a suitcase full of cash. Most of the officials who we have found who have accepted bribes accepted them very early on, usually at the start of their career, and oftentimes to take the initial position or run for the initial office. So they are bribed, in essence, to become officials, not once they have become officials. And that creates a big problem. So then what we looked at in terms of the election was, of course, a couple of things. With the 2020 election, we actually got provided information. One of the things that Ms. Chavez provided to us was information that wound up being germane to the 2020 election. And that was ballots and how mail-in ballots were being handled. And that led us to one of our investigators discovering actual ballots about 3 weeks before the 2020 election that were already filled out, that were in boxes along with cash. I think we reported on this yesterday, but I believe it was something like 17 boxes of ballots filled with ballots. You know, these are like large scale banker boxes of ballots filled out, plus three large scale banker boxes with cash. The second issue that we looked at with this is, of course, how elections were being run. Now, like I said, prior to the 2022 election, we weren't that interested in this. It wasn't what our mandate was. It wasn't what my office was being paid to do. There are clients here, and we do what they ask us to look at.
And let me just step there. Who's paying you to do this?
That I can't tell you. Clients are confidential.
Okay.
But I would say this, and it was what we said to the committee, and I think it's very important. My clients in this particular case are corporations who lost money in some of the racketeering schemes. They are not political organizations in any way. They are not affiliated with political organizations in any way. These are private companies, you might say, like private financial companies, financial institutions, et cetera, who have lost money because of payroll theft and because of insurance fraud.
All right. So let's walk through the counties and where you think this has occurred. Yesterday, we heard from Jacqueline Berger in the testimony before the House and Senate Committee. We kept hearing Maricopa County and Mesa County, Arizona, correct?
Well, you heard this. You heard Maricopa County and the city of Mesa.
Okay.
But in terms of counties, and I'll give you a little bit of the geographics for people who
Mesa's
don't know.
Yeah, Mesa is a city, not a county. Is Mesa in Maricopa?
Mesa is in Maricopa County.
Okay, thank you.
And I believe what we said yesterday, to be very clear, is that Mesa itself is a racketeering enterprise, as that term is defined under the U.S. Code. And we gave some examples of why that was. Now, there was a point where they tried to shut that down, and we couldn't go through with all of what we have on this. It is, however, in the packet that you've seen in the packets that we handed out. The other counties would be Pima County, which is where Tucson is located. Yuma County, which would be the southwest part of the state, and what's called Yavapai County, which is where Prescott, Arizona is located.
So are you saying that in Maricopa County and some of these cities, we have judges, the assistants to judges, DAs, assistant DAs, elected officials, police, sheriffs? Who are you saying, or are you saying any of them, correct me if I'm making a wrong assumption here in my question, are you saying these are the kind of people that would be blackmailed or bribed or are part of this and therefore their silence is bought? In other words, a case comes to them, let's say on election fraud, and they're like, we don't see anything here. No standing.
I would tell you at this point that we have police officers, not all by any means, but we have police officers. We have a mayor of the city of Mesa. We have city council members. We have supervisors, at least three supervisors in Maricopa County with problems. We have at least 25%, and it's really a much higher number, but we're still running investigations on this, but about 25% of the judiciary in Arizona has bribery issues and racketeering issues. And let's see, who else am I leaving out here? And then judicial assistants and other officials such as clerks and lawyers who are directly associated with the judicial operations.
And you're seeing this in about 20 states, is that correct, from the testimony yesterday?
We're seeing the money laundering in roughly about 20 states. The bankruptcy fraud, which we won't get into in a lot of detail tonight, but the bankruptcy fraud that we uncovered with this is prevalent in at least 11 states.
Let's ask quickly about ballots, ballot harvesting, money, cash, whatever else you might have seen in this regard.
Right. Well, one of the things that you look at, you know, look, I'm a political scientist by nature. My background is in public administration, not just in investigations. And so, you know,
but you are also a licensed attorney. Yeah. You're obviously a licensed attorney, went to law school as well.
Correct.
Okay.
And so, absolutely. And so when I look at elections and election fraud, you know, one of the things that has happened over my 30-year career is that I have been asked to look at donation issues. You know, I've been asked on the federal level and on the state level to look at dark money issues. Now we call it dark money. You have to remember, you know, more than 10 years ago, we didn't even talk about it this way. But I've been asked to look at issues involving elections before. It's nothing new. So there's a lot of things that we test for and look for, you know, even as outsiders. Remember, we don't have subpoena power. We don't have a grand jury behind us. So when we're looking at these things, you know, we have to be very careful about it, and we have to be very methodical, and we use various testing methods to see whether or not we think there's at least questions about an election. Well, clearly one of the problems here, and it certainly, if nothing else, is a gigantic ethics problem, is that the Speaker of the Arizona House, Ben Thoma, is directly related to the company, Runbeck Election Services, that runs the election services, including the ballots for Maricopa County.
Okay, just stop right there. Just explain again, Runbeck, tell me what that company does.
Okay, Runbeck Election Services is a private company. It's based in Phoenix, Arizona. It is used to run the elections. One of the things that it does, for example, is it prints ballots. It mails out ballots for the mail-in ballots. It counts ballots. It runs totals on ballots. If ballots were not counted through the machine, you know, they're somehow badly marked or somehow defective, those ballots go to Runbeck for counting. So Runbeck plays a very significant role in Maricopa County's election processes. Runbeck company is run by Robert K. Runbeck. It's also run by Jeff Ellington. Mr. Ellington is also the COO of a company called Precision Arrow. Precision Arrow is a company owned by the Thoma family. So you have a very direct line of existence between Ben Thoma, who's the Speaker of the House, running all the way directly to Runbeck Election Services. Now, forgetting the fraud for a moment, that's certainly an ethics problem that shouldn't exist.
You think that's in other words, it's also would be considered a conflict of interest? Is that what you're saying?
For sure it would be. For sure it would be, because anybody who has a stake in the outcome of an election, especially not so much necessarily within Maricopa County, but certainly for statewide offices, when Maricopa County is counting the ballots, certainly has a conflict of interest in having any direct connection with the company that's doing the count.
Okay, what about this? Now, this is, of course, used across the country. And I'd love for you to talk eventually if you could look into Georgia and what's going on there. But let me ask you about ballots and cash. Did I hear something about ballots and cash sometime in the last 24 hours?
Well, ballots and cash was something that we found directly in 2020. And again, at a time when elections was not our primary look. We did not look at this for 2022 for a number of reasons. It's because we were actually busy with other issues on the racketeering and not this. But what we did find is, of course, when we looked through, one of the things we looked through when we looked at the racketeering, and this is where it all comes together. And I think this may be a better answer to the question you asked before about public officials and their involvement and are they silenced? I would look at it this way. The racketeering activities involve almost all major parties of individuals in Arizona. There is so much cash floating around because of the drug money that there's a whole lot of money laundering going on. When you have money laundering going on, what you don't want to have is you don't want to have an IRS agent coming in and examining you. What you don't want is you don't want in California, it's the Franchise Tax Board, in Arizona, it's the Arizona Tax Board coming in and auditing you. You don't want counties coming in and auditing sales tax records. So how are you going to prevent them from doing that? Well, the easiest way is have them in your pocket. So what we find is that you know, when it comes to monies, this starts with how do you make money? How do you make more money? How do you keep more money in your pocket? And then it runs to making sure that the people who are the officials who would normally be the ones who would be investigating this don't investigate.
Let's bring in back in Mark Fincham, and let's bring in attorney Nicole Pearson, who was my guest earlier tonight. Mark, first, you, what do you think about what you've been hearing, Mark?
Well, I first spoke with John months ago, and he told me a story that I'm formerly a real estate agent, so I understood the flow of money and how real estate transactions could be massaged, if you will. Everything that I've seen and heard up to this date supports what the man has done. I mean, he's got solid work product. He's got an auditor who is meticulously following the money. So when we look at what, $7 million that came into Arizona?
Go ahead, finish your sentence.
Well, that came into Arizona against me for Secretary of State.
Yes.
And against Carrie Lake and Abe. It's like, okay, where did this money come from?
Wow.
You know, some people said, well, it's FTX, it's this, it's that. Okay, what John has done here is he has caused me to ask so many more questions than I have answers to. And that is where I think my colleagues in the House and Senate really need to do a deep dive,
because
need to do some digging.
Because there's some on that committee that don't think we should look at this, that this is crazy, it's fake. It's being used to discredit the work of the committee, and then there are others that say that we should look into this. Well, go ahead, Mark.
I think this goes all the way back to November 30, 2020. Why are we elected? I'm no longer in office, full disclosure, but why are people elected to be representatives and senators? Our job is singular. Ask questions.
Yeah, and that's all we're doing tonight. I can't validate what he's saying. I'm not an expert in this field, but I have a platform and I have a show, and I can ask questions as a layperson and hope that there's the same questions my audience is asking and represent them, right? And you can do that as their elected official.
And I think the point is, your job is to ask questions. Maybe it's two points. Ask questions and seek answers.
Yeah.
So here's where I think John, in the early conversations that I had with him, it's like, look, there's no question in my mind what we have. We have forensic auditing behind it. This is not some fanciful thing that, you know, the media, by the way, the spin machine's already at work. They're trying to make this out to be something it's not. Now, am I happy that it came out yesterday? Not really. I would have preferred that John had his opportunity to publish his book, go to court, and really present this as a trial case. But the fact remains that our republic is under assault by individuals who are willing to sell their soul for a dollar to seize power that they are not entitled to.
And we have Colonel John Mills, who's the one that introduced us to this story yesterday, who served on the national security staff for two presidents. He said in his calculations and research shows about $100 million from China to fund the Antifa street riots of 2020. So if they can launder Chinese communist money through America to do that, why is this so fantastic to believe? As an attorney, Nicole, you've been listening to this. I'm not an attorney. John's an attorney. As an attorney, what do you think about what you're hearing, and what more would you want to hear or see to be able to validate his claims and statements and research?
Well, first, I have to say thank you for doing this work. I understand, even from my limited work, the exposure that it gives you and the risks that it comes with. So thank you for doing this on behalf of everyone in the country, because this will span across every state. I mean, I'm listening and I'm right taking notes, because it's so lockstep, and what he has done is so thorough. Every time I wrote a question, he would answer, and then we did this. I mean, there's really nothing that I can see here that I would need to, I would ask for, that he hasn't already touched.
There's no red flag here. As an attorney, based on what you've heard so far, and I know there's more you want to hear and see, and we have sent you the documents. As an attorney right now, there's no red flags that would say that John is telling a fantastic story that's not true.
Correct. That is correct. Yes.
What about the risk of presenting this in lawsuits of defamation, slander, etc.? I guess truth is the best defense, right?
Truth is a defense. Truth is a defense. And I think it's ironic what Mark says, that there are some representatives who don't want to look at this. Those are the representatives that we need to be most wary of. If this is not true, then why do we have any fear of conducting the investigation? The ones who are opposing the investigation are probably the ones that are most implicated by it. And I think that's actually a green light, that indicator that it needs to go forward.
Brandon,
I think the signal flare here is show me the receipts.
Right.
And that's what John has been able to do that. That is what everyone needs to – that's the big takeaway here. This is not hyperbole. This is not some conjecture. He's got the receipts.
And, John, you have – you mentioned thumb drives and external hard drive. How many – I mean, if you don't want to answer, don't. But how many – how much data do you have going back how far that would implement how many people?
Well, we have – the data that we have, say, for Arizona alone – goes back roughly to about 1995, 1996.
Wow.
So you can imagine how many people that implicates. Now, whether or not they can be charged because of statutes of limitations, and whether, you know, that should be the focus at this point, that's a different question. Let me answer something you asked about, because I'm certainly willing to talk about defamation. And let me make this clear to anybody out there who's thinking of filing suit. I'm really good at discovery and I'm really good at cross-examination. If that's not become clear tonight, it would if you tried to sue me. You certainly can do that, but what's going to happen if you do is that I'm going to be allowed to do production of documents requests and get every single document that you wouldn't provide to the committees. So, you know, take your chances if you want, but if I have you on the stand, you better have some really good answers, because I got some really good documents.
Wow.
That's what I say about defamation. Come, you want me? Come get me. The second thing I would say also, though, which I was very surprised to hear today, was that somehow anything that we're doing is in some way undermining the committee.
Yes.
I thought that was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard in my life, mostly because I don't care about the committee. I care enough that they asked us to present, and we did. But I don't care about the committee. My job is to represent my clients. And to some degree, because of what this has become, my job also is to prove the case that we've put out there. That's what my job is. The chips will fall wherever they may. And representatives, elected officials, appointed officials, individuals who are neither, who have been involved in this process, are going to wind up paying a price for it. That's how it works. It has nothing to do with me. That's what justice is all about. You know, so I don't care what the committee thinks of this one way or the other, or what the legislature thinks of it. It's not for or against them one way or the other. We were asked to make a presentation about what our investigation shows, how we got to that, why we believe what we believe, and that's what we did. They can take it any way they want, but it was not ever intended, nor is it a personal attack on any person there, you know, other than obviously providing examples of what we mean when we say bribery and racketeering.
Nicole, as an attorney, what questions would you like to ask John right now?
Well, I was actually just shaking my head, because obviously the ones that are feeling attacked and undermined are the ones who the evidence is being presented against. I mean, again, if you're someone who's standing in truth, as he just said, truth and justice, then you shouldn't have any concerns about this information being shared. And he's just doing his job, which is to discover the facts and to share that information. And I mean, I really feel like he was very thorough here. I mean, my only question is, I probably don't have questions that he can answer on air, to be honest with you, which I respect. And so I won't ask them. But I think what he's doing is a tremendous service, not only to his clients, but also to the country. And I want to thank him for that, if anything.
So, John, what has happened to those? I mean, obviously you didn't show up yesterday because you say there's been attempts on your life. I can understand why. I mean, I would say, I guess the cartels would be after you. The crooked would be after you. A mafia type group would be after you. I could see that. I mean, I'd be scared to death of the deep state and what they're thinking about you. But John, what about those who've tried to speak the truth? Are there any, I mean, cause I heard stories yesterday of people being swatted. Can you explain and tell us about that?
Yeah. The term swatted is, it kind of stands for SWAT team. And it started off as where, you know, usually like a neighbor or somebody who was, you know, your enemy, somebody who didn't like you, would call the police and report that, you know, say at your home, you know, there was a shooting, or at your home, there was a burglary or a robbery or something, to get the police to show up, you know, guns drawn, and potentially harm you. you know, because, you know, police breaking into your house, you have no idea what's going on, you know, and you would get harmed. That's where the term swatting came from. What the term has now come to mean is, you know, using government resources, whether it's by outside individuals or government individuals, to try to attack individuals who, in essence, have uncovered, you know, racketeering, public corruption, bribery, et cetera, by making false charges, false allegations, false reports, et cetera. I mean, I think since this all started in 2018, I think I've had at least 5 separate complaints made against me with the California Bar Association, most of which the Bar Association has realized now are not to be taken seriously. Also, you know, the people who make the reports, you know, the signatures are falsified and stuff like that. Even Ms. Brager, after she testified yesterday, has had several, you know, comments put on her Yelp reviews for her insurance firm. You know, that say that she's a liar. She shouldn't be trusted. She's a horrible human being. How can she say these things? How could you ever buy insurance from this woman? You know, that's how this works. What we've had go on here, though, which is what's most dangerous, especially in the state of Arizona, is the use of the public facilities, the police, the police for sure, the sheriff's department to some degree, and certainly the attorney general's office to a large degree, filing charges based on false accusations, false documents, false information. And one of the things that we didn't talk about here, but one of the things that was talked about yesterday is, you know, is the viability of the databases. We have plenty of documents at this point that show infiltration into both the state databases and the Maricopa County database.
And you just went right where I was about to go. That was my next question, was talk to me about the databases, because yesterday there was the talk of things being loaded to the databases. How are you are you tracking to make sure that they're not loading fake documents now to cover the real documents? So now they start loading up a bunch of fake documents to cover their trail, and when you go look, you're like, oh, this is all crazy. So tell us about that and how that affects the elections as well, with the fake data being loaded.
Well, this is one of the big problems. One of the first things that Brittany Chavez brought to me was the fact that she had the ability to get into the databases. And she actually, in front of me, showed me how that's done. I am not a wonderful computer expert. I'm lucky that
we have people that are, and we can fully provide those to you.
Yeah, no, and that's what we do. And like I said, one of the reasons why we use so many outside experts, I think one of the questions Ms. Brager was asked yesterday was, how many people, you know, do you have working on this? And I believe her answer was, we have between 5 and 10 at any given time. You know, that's how we do things. We have people who are better experts than I. I lead the team, but we have people who are great at this. Now, what we have for sure is we have the ability to get into the databases. And I'll give you 2 different ways that works, kind of a for and against. One way, for example, is that some of the swatting has involved falsified, you know, default judgments. So a default judgment is created, and then it's loaded into, in this case, say, the Maricopa County Superior Court system. That then becomes a lien on a property. And so when you go and buy or sell your property, all of a sudden you've got to pay off a $5,000, $10,000 lien that you didn't know was there. Or some collection person comes after you, puts it on your credit score, and you now have to deal with paying off somebody monies from a lawsuit you didn't know existed and never really did. We've got probably at this
because
point
again,
several thousand.
Just so the audience understands, because those fake documents have been loaded to the system, kind of like how someone takes a house, it's paid off, and all of a sudden they've got your title and you've got to go get title insurance. I don't know if that stuff's legit or not, but it's the same concept. Fake paperwork's been created, and all of a sudden your house has either got a lien on it or the equity's been drained out of it.
Yeah, it's exactly the same system, but in this case, it's done with judgments. We've got that both with default judgments, criminal restitution orders, even child support judgments that have been falsified and loaded into the system.
And how many? You were about to say how many. How many?
Well, let's see. At this point, we've got thousands of them. And it's ongoing, so I couldn't even tell you how many total there will ever be. But at least at this point, we're talking, you know, well over 1,000, and probably it could be anywhere close to 10,000 by the time we're done.
And explain again, because the audience is a little confused from the feedback I'm seeing, that when you said your wife was hacking the database, that confused some people. Bring people to speed as to why you said that.
Okay. Right. My I would say former wife, except technically she's not a former wife. Our divorce decree is actually a fake document, which just kind of makes this about as you know, convoluted as you can get. However, when she was providing evidence, you know, before she stopped doing so, when she was providing evidence, some of the evidence involved databasing. And one of the reasons was is that we had found several specific, I can't go into detail, but very specific default judgments that were phony, both in the state of California and in the state of Arizona. And that brought us to a signature issue, which we can discuss in a moment. But there were phony signatures that were matching both documents in California and in Arizona, where we were able to talk to the judges themselves about these phony judgments. And the judges confirmed that these were phony. They had never signed these things. They had never had these cases in front of them. They had no idea what this was.
Wow.
So Brittany then showed me exactly how that system works.
So just so the audience knows, if they're tuning in late, you married a lady and you found all this out after you were married. And now all of a sudden, of course, you've had a child, I think. And now you're trying to unwind the marriage.
Correct.
But she along the way started trying to help you. But then, of course, apparently you said, according to you know, her maybe threats or whatever else, she's kind of like not really wanting to go with you under federal witness protection witness because she maybe is scared.
I would say it's more than that. You know, what happens is that, you know, by the time we got to the end of 2019, there was enough information to support, you know, a number of racketeering activities. As we said, we haven't really talked about the bankruptcy fraud or how the payroll theft works or the life insurance fraud or any of those things. But these are all part of it. These are all part of the ways in which money is obtained.
Okay.
You know, in the auto insurance fraud alone, we've got over 25,000 phony liens paid by insurance companies over the past 10 years.
Wow.
And that's how bad this is.
Mark, do you want to make a comment?
We have all of the documents to show.
Let me have you make a comment before you have to go, Mark. I know you've got to go, Mark. Go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you, Brandon. You know, this is a demonstration of the lengths that people will go when they sell their soul for a small piece of power that they are not entitled to.
Wow.
And there is no doubt in my mind that John has done yeoman's work. I'm anxious to see the total work product. But there are people who right now, I believe, are shaking in their boots because they've been outed and they're terrified of what's about to come. Now, here's the issue. John's going to have to go to court. And I'm hoping people will help support him financially for this. He doesn't know this is coming. We have got to regain control of the entire apparatus of government so that the people are represented, not special interests. And this is a special interest that I think he has uncovered that is, it's not just south of the border. The Sinaloa cartel has now moved into all 50 states.
Wow.
This is not a border issue. Every state is a border state now. So my thanks to John. Thank you, Brandon. I really appreciate what you've done tonight. I think that this needs to get everywhere for people to understand what exactly this existential threat is.
Yeah, well, so thank you. Thank you, John, Mark, for all you've done and for letting me call you last night and say, hey, should we pursue this? Should we pursue this? And you said, yeah, you should pursue this. Don't play that music. We're going to go over for a second. Drop that. Thank you, Mark. Nicole, hold right there for a second. John, I want to ask you this real quickly because we got to go. How does the phony default judgment scam work? Can you give me the brief synopsis?
Yeah, I mean, on the phony default judgment, what it basically is that when there is somebody who is a threat to any of the racketeering enterprises, they are targeted. And they are targeted in a number of different ways, one of which is to create and load into the system phony default judgments. Another way is to ruin their credit, is to put false marks on their credit report. It's to, if they have children, it's to try to take away their child. It's to place phony orders on them that they allegedly break. I mean, there's a whole system involved in how this is done. It kind of depends on how big a threat and who the threat is and why it needs to be done. The bigger the threat, the more things that will happen. The lesser the threat, the lesser things that will happen.
Wow.
But it's basically a silencing system, if you will.
I
was going to say that, and I wanted to make sure we got this in, that it's not just doing it for the negative to harm people. We have thousands now of people who have been charged with offenses, usually drug-related offenses, who have been let out because the system has been used to falsify their names, to make a change in their middle name, make a change in their birthday, so that they are let out or given the diversion program instead of going to jail. So it's both not only...
You know what, that is so interesting, because I have often said, if someone who is caught up with the elite and the whatever is found guilty in their show trial, I'm like, how do we know that person's really in jail? And by the way, recently we found out that some terrorist dude, he's gone. We can't find him in the federal system in Pennsylvania. He's gone. And that even furthered my concept and idea. How do we know this isn't a paper shuffling? And when these people are found guilty and go off to 25, 30 years in prison, they're not really there. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. And that's the problem. It's not simply used to harm people. It's used to help protect the people who are involved in the crimes by getting them off the hook.
Will you come back next week?
Absolutely.
All right. Nicole, final question before we go.
Yes, absolutely. I'm here.
Final comment before we go?
No, just thank you again, and God bless you, and we pray for your safety and your ongoing work. That's all I have to say.
Absolutely. Nicole, thanks for being here. Facts, truth, law, justice.com, right?
And that's it.
All right. And John, do you have a website or anything you want to promote?
Yeah, we will. When the book comes out, the title, the top title of the book is Report to the Governor, which refers to the fact that we did report these activities to Governor Ducey in May 2022, as well as other law enforcement agencies. And it will be reporttothegovernor.com, and it should be up within the next couple of days with several excerpts from the book.
We'd like to get you back next week. John, you're a brave man. We're going to pray for your safety. I appreciate your coming on. Again, I can't validate this, but you were kind enough to come on. Let me question you. You let two other people question you. You know, if Katie Hobbs or Ducey or the rest of them want to come on here and do live and try to say no, they're welcome to come on too. All I can do is have people on, let them speak, and let them talk. I normally would have let this program, this situation flesh out, but it was brought before a Senate and House committee combined yesterday. The whole nation that wanted to watch could see it. We saw it. If it's become an issue that's now in the public domain through a Senate House hearing, then why can't we go further, explore it, and ask questions and validate it or discredit it if it's not true? And tonight you've been willing to sit here, so thank you.
Well, Brandon, one of the things I will do before our next conversation is I will send you some of the forensic question document expert reports so that you can see exactly what it is we do and how detailed we get in these reports, and exactly what the documents are that we're referring to.
Okay,
and then if there's any of them,
so will you
come
back
about on the air, happy to do it.
Okay, will you come back next week and go through some of these default judgments and show us how that whole scam works?
Absolutely. In the documents that I will send you, you will see all of the different areas that our question documents expert has reviewed, and you'll see very specifically her report and how she reports on these documents, and I'll be happy to talk about any of them.
All right. Be safe, John. We've asked our whole audience to pray for you. Thank you, John.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Wow. John Thaler checking in. Katie Hobbs, Ducey, the rest of you, you're welcome to come on live, too, and refute if you don't like what he said or disagree or can prove it wrong. I'm just a guy here sitting asking questions. Again, this was brought into the public domain yesterday through that hearing. I would have waited and let this story flesh out if I just overheard it. But when it was brought before a committee, that committee should investigate. Why can't we, the American people, since this is a government of the people, by the people, for the people, also investigate and say, let's see if this is true. And tonight this man sat here and took the questions for over an hour, one from an attorney and one from a state rep and former Secretary of State candidate. And now we'll go continue doing our due diligence. That's what we're supposed to do. That's our job as journalists and as a news host. So that's what we've done tonight. And again, if anyone doesn't like what we've said, disagrees, wants to refute it, they're welcome to come on here live like he has. We'll give you equal opportunity. Now, I got to go. I'm over. Stay tuned for Silk. If you appreciate what we're doing, please don't forget about going to MyPillow.com, using the promo code B66, the new MyPillow 2.0, buy one, get one free. Where else are you going to get a program like this? We need your support. MyPillow.com, promo code B66. Sheets, towels, blankets, pet beds, slippers, sandals, mattress, mattress toppers, and so much more. And I won't even tell you who is blowing up my phone right now who's been watching all of this, okay? But let me tell you, major, powerful people have been watching this broadcast tonight. God bless them for watching, and God bless you for watching. Take care. Hello, I'm Brandon House. Do you appreciate the free programs at worldviewradio.com, WVWTV.com? Do you appreciate the fact we put out a 24-hour-a-day stream of free television? By the way, did you know that's free for you to watch? but it's not free to us. We spend thousands of dollars a month in pushing out free programming. We have to pay the bandwidth. Every time someone listens to a radio show, watches a TV show, we get a bill. We have to pay the bandwidth bill. That comes to thousands of dollars a month, not counting the cost of our IT guys and all the other costs that go with producing television, the guys in the control room, and so much more. If you appreciate WVW Broadcast Network, would you partner with us? You can partner with us and help us push out free programming as a ministry of WVW Foundation, because you know what we could do? Put it all behind a paywall. But instead, we said, let's not do that. Let's push out programming for free as a ministry of the WVW Foundation. Would you please consider making a contribution right now at WVWFoundation.com? That's WVWFoundation.com. You'll also find our mailing address there if you prefer to support us through the mail. You can also use our phone number and make a contribution over the phone by calling 901-468-9357, 901-468-9357. Thank you for supporting free programming through WVWFoundation.com.